a future member of the Queen City Group in Charlotte. I got to tell on myself, Plumback saw me Saturday out on the grounds, and he said, you're chairing Sunday morning meeting. And I said, I didn't bring any clothes. I didn't bring a sport coat or nothing. He said, well, I need to go buy one. He shows up this morning in a T-shirt. You won't be around when that conversation takes place either. I walk in with my new sport coat on, and I look like Minnie Pearl. I got every tag that's ever been on, it's still on it. So, I got to say something about the speakers. I've been coming to these things for a long time, and I've been here 4 years in a row, but I've been going for 20-some years, and without question, the best AA speakers are now non-speakers I've ever heard in my life, I've heard here. And that's a tribute to Jay and the members, his members that are helping him. I are one, but I just started, so I can't take any credit for that. Barbara started us off Thursday night with a bang-up talk. We get to hear the real story today, don't we, Bob? Butch is the kind of guy I would love to drink with. My kind of guy. We could be blood brothers. I love him to death. And the greatest AA talk I've heard in a long time. June knocked my socks off. She was talking to me when she started mentioning. I was a little lady sitting beside me was wiping tears, and all of a sudden I was wiping tears. Wonderful. I love you. Thank you so much for your message. And last night, Jim was superb. Thank you, Jim. And today we end up with a friend of mine from Tyler, Texas. Texas. I said Tyler because that's where Wino Joe's from. We broke bread together Thursday night. He's been sober long. He got sober 2 days before Jesus was born. Old timer, but he's solid AA, and I love him. And here he is with his message, Bob Smith.
Well, you can get you a coffee making job over at the new group. He didn't finish the story. The reason he kept him tags, he's gonna put it back on it and go get his money back. He was just telling me it was a little loose. I may be a little loose. I don't know. This morning I would certainly like to thank Alcoholics Anonymous in this part of the country. Thank the committee, certainly. Thank Jay. Many conferences that we seem to go to, and this one kind of raises the bar a little in that so many conferences, whether you're on this floor or that floor, you feel like you're still in an airport terminal. When you go into an area and you're around people and you're not going to be there but for a little bit to share some experience, strength, and hope, you can tell immediately whether there's good sponsorship, whether there's responsibility. It shows here. Y'all look good. Some of the best-looking mental patients I've seen in a long time, you know. And that's good. That's good. And thank you for having us. My name is Bob Smith, and I'm an alcoholic. It is by the grace of God. The recovery program of Alcoholics Anonymous and people like y'all. I'm here sober. My dry date is August the 5th, 1964. I hope, you know, this morning I can be grateful enough. A thing that touched me just a while ago when we was over there jawing a little like we do is my old big book that my sponsor gave me. The inside comes loose from the outside, and that's all right. But I just looked in it in the front, and I don't get to the front that much. And, you know, he gave me this book, 9/24/1962. And I still got it. And he's still with me. Now, I've had a little time out for bad behavior, because I was sober that day when he gave me the book. But, you know, like I say, at that point in my life, I had the ism. I sponsored me. And it was certainly self-will run right. If you would, very open-minded of anything that I have to share. My sponsor told me, and I've been taught here, that this program is real, real flexible, that it'll work as many different ways as there are members. But he told me that even for a guy like you, you can find a sober way of life here and be a productive individual. I didn't believe him, but I didn't believe anybody. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous to get sober. I didn't get here as an alcoholic. Only reason I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd been invited before, is because my key at that house did not fit anymore. And I was half drunk when she told me that the only way I was going to be able to get back in the house is, let's go to an AA meeting, because, as I say, I had had the invitation a number of years before. I'm pretty flexible half drunk. I'd have went anywhere. And I went over to that meeting, and it was one of those where some drunks designed this facility. It's back when they had too much money, and they had slot machines and stuff like that. And, you know, them and the Elks Club had slot machines. The only ones that the police ever jumped on was the drunks. Let everybody else run wide open. But you walk downstairs, and you could see where the building was prepped for several more stories. They had grandiose ideas. I went into that meeting that night and went down there, and she's behind me. And we walk in and had a wall there, divided the deal of a whole lot of people on one side and several on the other, and I don't know where to go. And so you can ask somebody in AA anything. I mean, you'll get you an answer. May not be the right one, but you're going to get an answer. And they said, oh, and here's where the meeting is. I said, what's all them people doing? I said, they're going to wait to play bingo. Well, anyway, we go in there and sat down, and a little while, well, it gathered up and had a room full of folks, and some people got up and said some things and introduced themselves and said there's alcoholics. I listened to about three guys get up there and say some things that we wouldn't even talk about at the bootleg joint. And they said that, well, we're to the spiritual part, and I knew there was a hickey somewhere. And back then they said, you know, we're going to pass the basket, and if you don't have a dollar to put in and you need to, take one out. But I'm going to tell you, they had some big guys watching the baskets. And then, you know, they said they're to the closing, and would we all stand and say the Lord's Prayer. And I couldn't even remember it. I wanted to crawl under one of the metal chairs. They, prior to that, had asked, are there any of you people there? And there was three of us there that night. I raised my hand. They clapped. I questioned that deal. And the others, the same thing. They clapped and said, keep coming back. After the meeting was over and they said the Lord's Prayer, people come by and said, we thank you for being here. I mean, there's some bootleg joints I couldn't go back to because I'm bad for business. And I had accounts at some of those places because the other places I didn't have any accounts. I wouldn't pay my bills. And here they are inviting me back to this deal. I need to get out. I've satisfied her. Where's my key? I need a drink. And so this went along, and I'm trying to get to the door. And you know how we are. We want to go shake their hand. And they want to, you know, everybody got the same pitch. Just, we're glad you're here. And little old thin blue-lipped people, I don't know how they got in the meeting. And somebody had to bring them there. They couldn't have found the building. And about that time, there's a guy tapped me on the shoulder, and he stuck his hand out, and he said, "My name's Joe, and I'm an alcoholic." It's nighttime, people. Joe got on tinted glasses and a suit and a tie and a white shirt. Looked like a preacher to me. And I told him, well, good. And we made a few steps, and he's still here. And he said, "Is this your wife?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, that's her." And we made a few more steps, and says, "Well," said Bob, "are you the one with the drinking problem or her?" I said, "She needs a drink." And but I have suggested that before and even tried it, but I said, "She can't drink good. And she sure don't like to drink with me." And so we made a few more steps. And about that time, Joe said the only thing at the meeting that made any sense to me. He said, "Well, Bob," said, "we have a program here for the non-drinking member." And I stopped. And he said, "Families are welcome here." Okay. Well, I got three kids. I mean, they need to be somewhere. And then her. And he said, "Yeah, really," said, "whether you realize it or not, she could be as sick, if not sicker, than you are." Now, me and Joe got down to business then. He's the only one at the meetings made any sense to me. I gave him my real name. I gave him my unlisted telephone number. And I said, "What can y'all do for her?" And it just went from there. And I introduced him to her. I said, "Here she is." And, you know, after that I left there and I'm drunk again, and I stayed drunk a while. It was necessary for me in my life for some other people to do a little thinking for me, because I really didn't have the ability to think for myself. It was just all about me and poor me and drunk. And I had a lot of trouble. I made a lot of bad decisions. And back then, well, you know, some of the laws had some teeth in them. And I showed back up. And they had filled out some papers down at the county judge. And back then, well, it worked. And you weren't going to go anywhere for 90 days if the judge signed it. And you called it a commitment paper. And they had my name on it. And they made a deal with me. I could either ride to the state hospital with two deputies, and I didn't like deputies then. I don't like deputies now. I like all people, but I just don't like deputies. And it's a thing that are two sober AA members. Well, that's a no-brainer there. Give me them drunks. And so they told me when and how, and I said, "That'll be fine." And they came by, and I got my little old bag packed in the car, and, "Oh, no, you can't do that." I said, "Don't go nowhere without my wheels." "Well, you ain't going then." And I said, "Well," of course, I didn't know. It could have started in Canada. It could have started down where I live and blew that way, or it could have blew either way with the wind. But see, Mitch knows about that keen alcoholic mind. See, I wasn't intending to stay down there anyway. And it's just 100 miles back to Lubbock, and I'll come back and get my car, get my truck. Because, you see, these people were talking to me about not drinking. Not drinking. There'd been people talking to me about not drinking for a long time. I had not drank before. I didn't stay drunk all the time. I showed up periodically. I had to. I had a wife and three kids. Now, I had a lot of trouble keeping the electricity running all the time. They cut it off. They still will today if you don't pay the bill. And they cut the gas off. I'm not proud of those things, but the way I was, it took me to some depths that not everybody has to go to. So I throwed my little bag in there, and here we go. We're off to wherever it is. We get down there, and they put me in that little old beginner hospital, and I need a drink. They came by and checked this and checked that, and I'm not in a good humor. Don't have any cigarettes. They brought me some stuff that they said come from somewhere. I don't know how you could get anything to smoke that dry. If you breathed on it, it was not in the paper. It went. So you did her again, and I had a nurse down there, bless her heart. She, after I kept pestering her about something to drink, and she said, and she brought me a deal. She said, it don't smell good, but said, it'll work. It surprised me. That's where I met peraldehyde. And I had me about three of them peraldehyde deals, and the nurse looked good. But she helped me roll one of those cigarettes, and I got to smoking a little bit, and I thanked her for the drink. Two or three days later, they took me over to that ward, and I made about 10 steps on that ward, and I saw a guy I didn't like, a guy that had been of a power in my life. I didn't think I was glad to see him. I wanted to get even. And ex-assistant high school principal of mine. I asked this attendant that had me. I mean, he looked like a linebacker, this attendant did, so I'm with him. I was down to whiskey weight. That's about 145 for me. And it wasn't good. And, oh, yeah, I asked him, I said, is he in here? He said, oh, yeah, he's in here. And, see, y'all really didn't get much when you got me. They, in these meetings, I was in there with a lot of alcoholics. Now, I looked at them, and I didn't know them. And Shelby was there, and he hold little group sessions and this and that, and talk about, I asked one of them drunks before the meeting, I said, what do we do here? Oh, and they had them window shade steps and traditions up there, just like we got at home. And then he says something about, we got a big book. Really? Yeah. Because, I mean, and they ribbed me about that big book. I figured they was going to bring her down the hall in a wheelbarrow. But, and Shelby, he talks so fast, it's about 3 days before I could get my two little marbles to where I could understand what was going on. And they'd go around the room telling who they were and where they were from, what town and this and that, and there's an alcoholic. They get around to me, I just tell them my name's Bob and I'm a drunk. That's what I thought I was. I'd been called a drunk for a long time. You know, they ceased to invite me to family deals. They wouldn't invite me to family reunions at all because I got other people drunk, they said. Screwed up the whole cooking. And I didn't think it's my fault. It's surprising who will drink if you furnish the booze. Now, that bunch I was hanging with, they're so tight, they wasn't going to buy nothing. But if you furnish it, they will get staggering, knock-kneed drunk. And so here I was. I'm someplace I don't want to be doing something I don't want to be doing. And that's me living with me sober. And they told a lot of strange things down there, and I didn't believe none of them. Why should I? They talked about not drinking. They talked about alcoholism. And I didn't know anything about alcoholism. If it was ever anything like that taught in school, I was absent. I'd learned how to be absent at school. I'd learned how to sign my mother's name. Excellent. I did a good job signing my dad's name. They traveled a lot. Grandparents watched after me as much as they could. They thought they was doing a good job. And, if I got things weren't working well in this school, I'd get a transfer. Go to another school. Same town. Wasn't anybody going to know it. I didn't get caught for 30 days. It wasn't good then. Living through active alcoholism is something, but living through my dad not killing me is something else. It was just not good. It wasn't good at home. It wasn't good in Big Spring. I'm sure it probably was a relief for the family. I don't know who was paying the bills. I don't know who had. I stayed at least two house payments behind. They said, don't get three, we're going to get the house. So I always stayed on the edge. It is a thing that one of the guys that was in there, I saw someone one day sneak in two pints. He hid one and took one and went to the bushes. I went and stole the one he hid and went to the bushes. I had been around the facility a little bit, and I knew they was running off some Raisin Jack down at the laundry, but I couldn't get down there. That's off limits. I work in the kitchen. And so, I I got drunk twice while I was there. And I would have done more. I would have been, you know, done a little bit better job with. But Shelby called me into his office, and he set me down, and he said, well, Bob said, I'm tired of all these shiners that you're pulling. And said, it's a deal that I believe really that when I was drinking, I was more honest than you are sober. I wasn't sensitive. And I didn't know what he was talking about. And he said, if you do this anymore, said, I'm going to take you over to Ward 5, and we will plug you in, and you will live better electrically. And I passed on that deal. So it's kind of like being in jail. Eventually, you're going to get out of any place. They knew I wouldn't get very far before I got drunk, but I did. There was people came after me, took me back. I don't know. I think maybe they got together and Joe lost, drew the short straw. He called me. She and I were kind of getting a divorce at the time, and we was trying to do some things for the kids. And Joe called and said, Bob, I'll be by to pick you up. We're going to a meeting. And he did. He came by, and we started going to meetings. I didn't know what we was doing at meetings, but we went. And when they passed the basket in meetings, I didn't have a dollar to put in. I was broke. In fact, I was worse than broke. And I tell Joe, I said, this don't feel good. He said, it's okay. He had me picking up ashtrays and picking up cups and this and that, and we'd go someplace else. And where we went into a group, people that Joe had introduced me, and people come over and shake my hand. Shake my hand. Glad you're here. Glad you're here. It's glad to see Joe. I just figured he knew everybody. And this went along, and to let you see exactly who I was and how quickly I forgot what I was and where I came from. I'm productive when I work, but I don't work and drink at the same time. And so I went to work, and I hit the ground running. I'm playing catch up. I know how to do that. And I'm making the meetings. We didn't have but 3 meetings a week. And I'm making the meetings. And Joe tells me to, look, this is what we're doing, and this is where you're going, and this is how it's going to be. Okay. And he says something you really need to understand. He said, there's not 2 standards here, there's 1. I'll never ask you to do anything that I'm not doing. We'll do it all in an AA manner. Okay. All I could do is say, okay, I don't know nothing about a standard. I don't know anything about what we're doing. I just don't. I'm not willing because, see, I'm still a drunk. I went to meetings as a drunk. I was in there with a bunch of alcoholics, and I didn't know. And we rode and talked and this and that. And, you know, 2 or 3 months later, they passed that basket. I had a dollar. I put one in. Made me feel good. Really did. They had coffee kitty. I could put a dollar in or a quarter. And I kind of swelled up a little bit. And, you know, I went along there and went along there, and I'm doing good. I'm catching all this stuff up. I had a lot of people mad at me. The IRS was mad, the district attorney was mad, and the banker was mad. The only reason they were mad is that they wanted their money. And the bank was really mad. I'd sold some mortgage property and kept the money. And I'd had a pretty good party on it, and it is all green. Theirs was and mine was, and they just should have made that check out to just them if they wanted the money. I mean, it was had my name on it. And, you know, this went along, and I went by, and Joe says, you got to go see this one. Got to go see that. I promise we were not up to step 8 and we were not participating in step 9. This is to keep you out of jail, son. Keep you out of TDC. And I said, okay. So I go do these things. He had me get a spiral notebook, write down everybody I owed. Well, send this in $5 a month. That's not the kind of guy I am. I want to wait till I got that $400 in my pocket and go in and lay her down. No, $5 a month. I said, that's a little humiliating. He said, you do it. And we kept going to meetings. And then about 5 months, well, I get to thinking again. And we're in these meetings, and they're at the end of the meeting, and I'm watching those baskets. He didn't, she didn't, and they didn't put any money in. I tell Joe, I'm going to go talk to them after the meeting. They sobered up and tightened up. So I immediately started judging. I started practicing a little law, quite a little bit of marriage counseling. And I started pushing and shoving, and I went along. And see, I'm a guy that went to meetings. I didn't hear what people shared from the podium. I heard what I heard. There's a guy stood up there one night and said, "There's not anything too good for a drunk." I couldn't believe that. And it made me go buy a bunch of stuff that I couldn't afford to impress some people that I did not know. Cost me a lot of money. And then Joe's right there by my side. Another meeting. There's a lady standing up there. She says, and again, it's been touched on this weekend, not exactly in this manner. She says, "If you want what I have and you're willing to go to any length to get it." I said, "Joe, she's advertising." And, you know, there's nothing about this. And at the group I was going to then, at the end of 365 days, they bake you one of them $1.29 cakes. They put a candle on it, and they light it, and they give it to you. And I said, "Is that it?" They said, "That's it." I'd heard people say that the highest you ever get here is sober. Well, see, I'm sober, but I'm not very comfortable. Now, all this stuff, this shiny stuff that started impressing me, that they said wasn't anything too good for a drunk. Well, you know, at a year sober, I wasn't comfortable. I didn't feel good. Now, a saving grace that I had for a long time was working with others. If Joe told me to go get a drunk, I went and got a drunk. Now, it didn't make any difference whether he wanted to come or not come. I'm going to get him. And I get him in the car. And I will take him to the meeting or wherever Joe said. Because, you see, the way it was with me, my sponsor was the very first higher power I ever had in my life. First person that ever asked me to do something, and I did it. And then things went along, and another buddy in the group called me, and he said, "Bob, I need to talk to you." And I said, "Sure." I figured he'd need to know something. And so we got together, and he came over, and he said, "Bob," said, "I came into AA back in 1948. I was here for a little while, and I got to doing some things." And he said, "I got on a dry drunk." And I said, "Well, Johnny, I'm sorry to hear that." And he said that if you don't change your ways and get off this dry drunk you're on, said, it took me from 1948 after I got drunk up until 1961 to get back here. And I said, "Well, Johnny, I'm just real sorry." And he said, and kept trying to tell me that he thought I was going to get drunk. To let you really know that Johnny don't know what he's talking about, I mean, it was about 2 months before I got drunk. And I came back here because I had no other place to go. And I've been back here 10 or 15 minutes at a time or an hour at a time since then. That's when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. Quit walking around out there, and that's when I got in. And I made the agreement with Joe. I didn't like it. I got back. I wasn't drunk but 12, 14 days. Went places, you know. I'm dangerous. And it's a thing that he, in front of people, he said, "Bob, you're not very good here." And I acknowledged that. He told the secretary to get my card out, said, "You'll either change your dry date and work the steps with me or tear the card up. I'm not going to work with you." See, you can think anything you want to, but be real careful what you tell your sponsor. I told him, "I'll be happy to work the steps, Joe." And, of course, I thought, "Well, I'll needle you enough, you'll probably get drunk." But it didn't happen that way. And that kind and gentle man took time. He invited me over to his home. I'd been there before. We sat down and we went through the steps, the recovery steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We talked about this book. We talked about the 12 and 12. We used only conference-approved material. And as we started going through these steps in areas where I was a little hesitant, Joe shared some of his life with me. And he told me, he said, "Well, I didn't know." He got right. He said, I can't even go back to New Mexico. said, they run me out of that state. If I go back, they'll put me in jail. I looked at him. Of course, you know, I was about as humble as Gaddafi back in those days. And I said, Joe, that's not a very big state. And he giggled and laughed, and we finally got through and got through those steps. I had made amends where I could, and some we waited on. And just kind of with some of my arrogance, I kind of kicked back a little, and I said, Joe, what are we going to do now? Oh, he said, Bob, we're going to wait about a week, and then we'll just start over. He said, something that you really need to understand is how we stay current in Alcoholics Anonymous. We continually go through these steps, apply these steps in our life. This is not where you come to get sober, son. This is where you come to learn how to live sober. And, you know, we've been doing that for a long time. Life went on, and I got down through there. There's action and activities in my past that there's things that happened to me. Back when I was in high school, I was about 17. My dad was drinking, had a wreck. And they charged him with murder with a motor vehicle. And we had us a trial the next year. And, he had to go do some time. They gave him 2 years. He did about 9 months. I didn't want to go and move and take care of the family. That's when I married her. And it was me coming off one of those drunks, and it was a bad decision on my part and certainly one on hers. But you see, she was still there and I was still there. And I was doing these things for these kids. I had a responsibility I felt toward them, and I made a hand in that area. And life went along, and I was active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I went places and did things just like y'all do. I had a home group. Just like I've got a home group today. It's the Lubbock group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I hear people stand at a podium and say that, and that's the best group in the world. Mine is not the best group in the world. They are a bunch of dumbasses down there. And I just wish they didn't even make cell phones. Mine started going off yesterday, some of them whiners down there. David, our friend that came up, he got them little old cones about that tall. No whining. We had them down to group, but they must have threw them away. But, you know, they started whining, and we've been gone a few days. But we will return. And, you know, I went along and went along, and I'm doing things again in an AA manner. My dad that had come down to check me out, he couldn't believe I was in Big Spring State Hospital. So he just rode down there to see what I was into. Yep, he's here. He just turned around and went back to town. And he and I got to where we could get along. He was a guy that I'd put up on a pedestal. Shelby, I'd put up on a pedestal. I respected these people. And things went along in my life, and my dad and I got into business together back in 68, and it was comfortable. And things went along there, and we have conference down in our part of the country, and I'm a little over 13 years sober, and they'd asked me to be the chairperson that year, and I said, fine. And meetings and this and that, and had it all put together, and things is winding down, and I'm over at the store one day, and Mother and Daddy had just gone down the road to motorhome, and I'm sitting there, and in through the front door come a bunch of folks. They had funny gear on. It said ATF. They wasn't but 28 of them. And I knew some of them. They came over and, hi, Bob, how you doing? I said, real good. I got up and shook hands, and they had stacked papers about that tall. And he read me my rights. I said, all right. And and he said, Bob, I'm sorry I'm over here, but it's my job. And so he said, kind of don't make any strange moves around here because these people are, they brought them in from Dallas and Fort Worth and different areas. They didn't have 28 out there. And I said, what is all this mess? And he said, there it is. And you know, we get here, maybe we thinking we've got a little terminal uniqueness, and maybe we do. I acquired some after I got here. And because mine's the only case like it in the United States up to this point. And, I mean, it's on record at the Fifth Circuit. I don't think I need to go look at it, nor do you, but it's there. And we waited a while, had us about an eight-day trial over there in the federal court, and they said, we all stood up, and he said, guilty. And that's probably the first time as a grown man that my knees knocked. I went to the committee and told them I felt like they'd probably need to get another chairperson because I didn't think I was going to be available. And things went along, and the U.S. Marshal come over a few months later, and he, Bob, here's you some papers. And I said, thank you. And report to Safford, Arizona. I said, where is that? So we looked at the map. I mean, he's a buddy of mine. And I said, okay. And so I got in a Coupe DeVille Cadillac and drove to Safford, Arizona, and I showed up when I was supposed to be there. I talked to my sponsor about it, and he said, well, I don't know whether they got any AA out there or not. If they don't, get you a meeting started. And we did. They got a wall around that place about that tall, and it's about that wide. They say it's 5 years wide. Don't go over it. And so I understood that. I got there two or three days early to make arrangements for my car, and I caught a cab out there and walked in. And I've never been locked up 30 seconds since that deal happened. But I was convicted, and it did happen. And it didn't used to be against the law, but they changed the law. Used to, the book started out about like that, and then it grew, and then they got more volumes. And I did what I had to do out there. I wasn't gone long, about 4 months, and I came back, and I got active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got active doing things. They get every day that they hammer you on, and that's fine. I paid it all. I had no problem standing up and having the dignity in my life. I never denied doing what I did. I just didn't know it was against the law, and it don't work. And I went along, and this lady that I had been married to, and we raised these kids, and all the kids were up. And I sat down in a home out there that we owned, and I told her, I said, you know, this deal's not good. You deserve more out of life than what you've been getting from me. You're not getting a fair shake. And I said, I'm going to go see the lawyer, and we're going to get a divorce. And it's a deal that wasn't any big traumatic scene or anything like that. And I went down and we did that. Now, you know, back in those days, it you could not change anyone's lifestyle, is what my attorney told me at that time. I said, okay. But see, I didn't know this was going to drag out for 2 years. And so I got to go give her $3,000 a month for 2 years, and I'm unhappy about this. I asked him, when will this ever be over? He said, don't know. Well, they tore up a new car one time. She called and told me. I said, your lawyer's got the title. Or mine, somebody's got the title. I don't. Well, she said, you getting me another car? And I said, uh-uh. And I hung up. Well, it's not 15 minutes. They tell me my lawyer calls, says, do you know about this? And yeah. And, well, you got to get her another car. And I said, you're kidding. No, not kidding. You can't change her lifestyle. Well, I said, she's changed mine. And this went along, and I don't know. And I wasn't getting a divorce to go do nothing. I'm tired of being uncomfortable. And, I mean, I didn't have nothing going on nowhere. And it finally got over with, and we signed the papers and this and that. And I left there with an old war out El Camino, and I had my duffel bag in the back of it, and that's okay. And I kept going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I've always been welcome here, always been welcome. Some of them kind of veer around me sometime when something going on, but I've always been welcome. I've always told the truth here, and they know that. This ex-wife of mine, the finest thing that, and she really didn't know what she said, or she wouldn't have said it. She hired out to the state down there, and part of her criteria in the area of her expertise, she was a school teacher and decided to do something else and married to Bob Smith for X number of years, and they knew me. And that qualified her to go to work for MHMR. And I thought, well, isn't this a hoot? And back when we owned a treatment center, well, she told this family, just get a hold of Bob Smith. Said, if there's anybody in the country that loves drunks, it's him. And said, he will help you. And she didn't know she was saying something nice about me, or she would not have done that. And my life rocked along there for a little bit, and I met a lady. I'd known her, and in fact, we were partners on some stuff. She and I got to go in places together and doing some things, and we got married. We were married for a period of time. She didn't feel good. About a year and a half, well, they're getting blood tests and blood gas tests and x-rays and just stuff that doctors do when they're looking for things. And it went along, and I had a talk down south at something, and I told her, I said, I've made arrangements. We're going into the hospital when I get back. And I said, we'll find out what's wrong. And she said, fine. Went down there and came back, and I checked her in the hospital on July the 1st, 1985. And she died on July the 10th. And, you know, she wasn't ready to go. But she's a sober member of this organization. She's a little over 7 years sober. And she is 44 years old. And, you know, she had cancer. And I had people call me and contact me and this and that. Bob, are you okay? Well, yeah. Because anything that's ever happened to me in my life has driven me further into Alcoholics Anonymous. This is safe base for me. Like Barbara was talking, she washes ashtrays. I sweep the floor. I know how to do that. I pick up cigarette butts. I know what to do with them. Throw them away. These other people don't, but I'm trying to show them. And, you know, I went along there and went along there, and there I am, like Barbara shared the other night. I'm trying to run two businesses. And when you own a drunk farm and you're the sole proprietor and it's private and it's freestanding, and the buck stops here, and then you own another business in town, I'm having problems because I can't say grace over both of them. I mean, I had a guy working for me that worked for me about 18 years. So I called that oldest boy and made a deal with him, moved he and the family and the grandkids back, and I put him in town, and I stayed at the lake. And there's things happening. See, I know how to get a drunk's attention. You know, you just hit him in the mouth. And or slap the dickens out of it. You go and get their attention, but see, you can't do that when you're licensed. And you can't go around behind nothing or nowhere. It's just you got to play by the rules. And so I called Barbara, and I talked to her about some things. And this went along, and Barbara and I went with her for a little over 3 years, she had two kids. We visited with each other. I talked to her father. He knows more because he's 2 days sober longer than she. And, that's what he says. And, you know, and she and I got married. And, again, next month, it will be 17 years. And, we've never had an argument. We don't have anything to argue about. Everything is built on a solid program of Alcoholics Anonymous. These boys, used to, it was a lot more families seemed to be involved in AA in our area than what there is now. We invited families to bring their kids. People didn't have babysitting money. Bring them up there, but take care of them. Don't turn them loose. And, you know, so here I am, taking kids to meetings, and they minded. They really did. The youngest boy, his name's Brett. I couldn't afford to get him one of them good store-bought haircuts, and he's still small enough till, you know, I can do it myself. I got a lot of talent. And this went along, and Brett, he's up there, and he smiles all the time when he's at the meetings because he likes you folks. Y'all welcomed him. You really did. And old Henry, he's over there, and he'd worked for the post office forever. And he could just grin in, and here come him and Brett. And Henry's trouble. I mean, he was 22 years sober, and he is influencing my kid. And he's my kid's about four. And Brett says, look here, Dad. And Henry gave him 2 quarters. I said, give them back to Henry. I don't want that kid hustling. And he said, Brett, that's your money. And Henry's still laughing. And I said, Henry, what's the matter? He said, you know, Bob said I was talking to Brett. And I said, that's good. Y'all go back over here and talk, but don't be giving that kid no money. And because they all liked him. Hell, he'd had a pocket full. And Henry says, you know, I was talking to Brett and said, I asked Brett what he wanted to be when he grew up. And he looked right at me and he said, you know, I want to be an alcoholic. Now, I'm going to promise you that a 4-year-old don't know what an alcoholic is. And we can all laugh about that. But you see, that's the example that you people put to this kid. I'm here to report that he made the grade. I just nearly helped him to death. I got him out of about 3 DWIs, but I said, that's it. It made me go to Al-Anon. It did. And in fact, it's pretty easy to say release and release with love. Well, I don't really know how to do that when it comes to something that's really a thorn in my hiney, and he was. But, you know, he's got him several years together, probably got 9 or 10 years. He lives down north of Atlanta. And he, you know, his deal's his deal. Youngest daughter, she of mine, I think she's just a drunk. I don't think she's an alcoholic. She don't need to go to meetings. I'm going to tell you about me and my alcoholism. And, you know, I've seen people and been around. There's no authority. There's nobody alive today that has the privilege to speak with any authority in Alcoholics Anonymous. They're all dead. But to think, you listen, some of them think they got the authority. You know, I mean, back in our country, I'm sure it's not out here in this humble area. But we got folks that show up with strange things wrong with them. And this is an AA meeting that we have. And then, of course, we're operating under the umbrella here. But anyway, he got his deal in this. Daughter, she's sober. She just don't have to go to meetings. And that's fine. But, I mean, for me, I understand an alcohol problem, and I certainly understand alcoholism. People that's got an alcohol problem, all they got to do is just not drink. People like me that have alcoholism, I'm sick physically, mentally, spiritually, and emotionally. Any of these areas left untreated in my life, I'm trusting alcoholism. I'm into half measures. Here are the I know about me and my mental problems. I know about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization in sobriety. In sobriety. I'd been a taker most of my life. I knew how to take. When you're a liar, cheat, and a thief, you know how to take. If it's too big to carry and you can't do something with it, just lay down beside it and claim it and get you some help. But, you know, in here, I had to learn how to give and give freely without any expectation. The theme, but for the grace of God. It's touching. And it means something. And it means something to me and each of you as individuals. You're important in your home group. I'd ask you to, whether you're AA or Al-Anon, to be aware that AA needs you and Al-Anon needs you. Just because I see people go to an AA meeting doesn't mean that they're active. We have people that don't want to take the steps. That's fine. They want to create the indifference that Alcoholics Anonymous breaks down. It did it with me. I feel like it did it with you. It happens not just in South Carolina. It happens in Texas. It happens in Oklahoma. It even happens in Canada. And, you know, and it looks good on you. I didn't know anything when I got here. I didn't have anything when I got here. I didn't know how to be grateful. I didn't know what a gratitude list was. It's a thing that Bob said, keep this thing simple. Don't louse it up. It doesn't make any difference what you're carrying or what the deal is or who you owe or who you don't owe. It don't make any difference what you rode up in. If you call somebody to bring you to the meeting, be at the meeting. I don't know what time this thing started. I know about what time it is, but I told the lady yesterday, last night, I said, well, I'll be through about 1:30. But, you know, I've enjoyed life. We got so many friends in so many places. I've been with people here, and as they've talked about those that have gone before us, they're important. We need to remember. I talk about it a little back in our group, and I said, you know, walking into the group, I said, you people have no idea how many bodies you're stepping over. And they just look at you like, what are you talking about? They don't know who's paid what price where. I have not changed in ways that I do things in AA from the way that my sponsor taught me to do things. There's one standard. I've never asked anyone that I do some things with to do something I'm not doing. A few years back, about 6 years, well, close to 6 years now, I had this, he's sober about 10 years, he whined all the time. And he come down to the office and we're sitting there talking and he felt bad and he's this and that and he's had him 4 or 5 back operations. You can't feel good after 4 or 5 back operations. I don't care who you are. And but he's just wanting to do things his way. And he wanted to go back to work. And if you had that problem and got that problem, it's just a lot of things you can't do. And so I said, well, do you want me to get you a doctor's appointment out here or are you going to get it? So I got a commitment out of him. He went to the doctor. A few days he came back, may have been a week, I don't know, and brought, I said, I don't see the paper too, because you can't trust him. you may not can trust who's sitting by you, I don't know. But anyway, he brought me the paper and I look at it. I said, okay. He said, Bob, can I ask you a question? I said, certainly. He said, how long you been to the, how long has it been since you've been to the doctor? I said, 10-12 years. I told him, I said, when you're bulletproof, you just don't go unless you got to get something fixed. And, well, he said, do you want me to make you an appointment or do you want to make it? So, I said, well, Tony, just make me an appointment. I don't care. It'll be all right. So I went out there and did what was asked to do. I get a letter in the mail. But I pitched it up here where it belongs. It don't make any sense to me what it's talking about. And I quit practicing medicine. I quit marriage counseling. And I have quit practicing law. None of that am I going to do. So Tony showed up in a few days. And he said, did you get a report? And I said, sure, it's up here. And I handed it to him. He said, did you call the doctor? I said, no, don't need to. I got a letter. And he says, do you know what it means? And I said, I have no idea. Well, he said, you need to call the doctor. So I start calling the doctor, and they invite me out there on this time and this date. So I go out there, and I see him, and I hand him a deal, and he said, oh. So after a little more looking and searching and this and that, and hell, I got Barbara out there to help me. I need help. And we sat down, and they diagnosed me with some cancer. And they shared it with us. And said, I don't trust it. I don't trust it, and I don't like it. And so it's not a real big decision. I said, just cut it out and throw it away. I don't want it. And And certainly, she and I both agreed. And I said, get her done. And so that's what they did. And so, you know, this January, about the 10th or something, it'll be 6 years that I've been cancer-free. I have no why, what for, how come, and why me in my life. That's what I got here with. They're all gone. They're all gone. I know that it said in the flyer that James has got 60 and 70 minute tapes, but don't have any 90s, so I'm going to quit. It's a thing here that many, many people have shared their life and their existence with me. And I'm most blessed. I have a wife that I'm in love with. She's a lady. I treat her with respect and I treat her with dignity. We have kids and grandkids that come visit. We have the privilege to keep even grandkids. I think that my sponsor, and bless his heart, he I was around about 3 months before I knew that he just had one eye he could see out of. Other than store-bought. And we were going to a meeting one night, and he hit a barricade. And I said, Joe, didn't you see that thing? Nah, it's over here. I didn't see it. It's okay. See, he could do things and it'd be okay, but not me. And we get on. Well, I'm not through talking about that. And we get to the meeting, and I said, why you wear them dark glasses at night? Well, they said, I just like wear them. And he said, well, I got a glass eye. I said, you're kidding. I said, I'm driving home. And then, bless his heart, he's got one ear that he can hear out of. And he's got a hearing aid on it. And he's had this leg problem since he was 10 years old. About 15 years ago, well, it got to being so tacky, and it's been operated on 15, 20 times. They just cut his leg off below the knee. Now he got a store-bought leg. He's wore out. I mean, after they start cutting legs and stuff like that off people, well, I mean, he had to go. He didn't want to go, but I think that probably the psychiatrist gets more from Joe than Joe gets from him. But, you know, they got them sinking spells, they say. Joe don't have no sinking spells. He's steady. And, you know, and they go eat breakfast together, and Joe gets him a bunch of sausage and gravy and this and that, and Joe ain't got no cholesterol. He's trying to get some. And this doc, he's doing all he can do to get rid of what he's got. And Joe ain't got no cholesterol in his back. All that stuff's wore out. And here he is, and bless his heart, I was over by to see him the other day, and he sometime lays down on the floor in a fetal position, and his wife's a retired nurse, and she gets some pillows laid around, and I get in there, and, you know, he still has the privilege to interfere with my life. And he starts giving me some direction and asking me about this and about that. And I tell him the truth because he's got spies. And he's much of a blessing. I'm most blessed that I've had him all this time. And he's doing good. He's doing good. I won't have to report in until I get back. And, you know, in closing, something that someone shared with me for a long time ago. And it's about a couple, a family that lived out in a rural area, just grubbing out a living. Grubbed up some old trees and stuff and plowing that old black land and trying to grow something, trying to make it. There's a mother and a dad and a daughter and a son. And sometime it was pretty good and sometime it was pretty thin. And he had cleared off a big place down there where he was going to sell that timber. And he had told his wife, they had him used 2 years ago, and it was an old Monkey Ward catalog. And they had one there at the house that they kind of looked through and looked at the pictures. And they had set the kids down and there at the supper table one night, and they'd made a decision on what they'd like to order. And the lady wanted to order a looking glass. She didn't even have a mirror in the house. And it's excited everybody, and he'd sold that, had the money coming on that timber that they had cut down, and they was going to clear off some more land. Felt like they'd have another good year next year. And so they carried this order down to the mailbox and placed it in there, and little Jack was the boy, and he's running around, and he's wanting this and wanting that, and when does it get here? You can't explain to somebody that's about 6 years old or 7 years old or 8 years old about the mail. And he wants what he wants when he wants it. Now, I understand that. And, you know, little Jack, he'd run back and forth down there, and this went on for a week or two or three, and mother would quiet him down a little bit, and the father would quiet him down a little bit, and he just wants to know when it's going to be here. And finally, little Jack went down there one day, and there's a package. And he run to the house, said, Mother said the package got here. And Mother said, fine, set it over there, and said, after your dad gets in tonight and we have dinner, said, we'll put it up on the table and we'll open it. And little Jack, he did what he was told to do, but he didn't want to. And late that evening, the dad showed up, and he cleaned up, and the wife had the food ready, and they all sat down at the dinner table, and they prayed over the food, just like we do at our home. And little Jack, he never helped clean the table off, but he did that night. And they went along and got the stuff back in the kitchen and got the package out there, and the wife handed it up to her husband and said, baby, if you would, open it for us. And he did. And, you know, living out there in that old backwoods and doing that stuff, he had him an old rustic beard, and he fluffed it a little bit here and a little bit there, and handed the mirror over to his wife, and she looked at herself, and then handed it to the daughter, and she looked at herself in the mirror, and she fluffed a little bit, and then they handed it down to little Jack. Little Jack, he looked in the mirror and rubbed his hair, and then he looked some more and looked some more, and he looked at his sister and his mother and his dad, and he asked his mother, said, Mother, why do I not look like y'all look? What happened to me? You see, little Jack, when he was just a tyke crawling around down there around the corral, a horse kicked him upside the head. And it badly maimed him. And his mother looked right at him and said, well, Jack, we love you just because you're you. That's what I found here. You love me just because I'm me. I think whatever you get out of life today, when you get back to your respective area, try to give it away. Thank you, and God bless you. Thank you. Appreciate you.